Darwin had a really big theory, or a big problem with his theory of evolution by natural selection. He's got this big problem. He couldn't find how advantageous traits would show up. He couldn't figure it out. In Darwin's mind, he understood blending inheritance. Darwin believed in blending inheritance. So, he's got a giraffe, and that's the normal neck. And it mates with a giraffe with a very long neck. In Darwin's mind, you would get a kid with a medium neck. Those traits would blend together. Darwin had trouble figuring out how those traits would show up and how they would be separate, okay? How he would prevent them from blending together, okay? How would it be that these advantageous traits wouldn't just disappear over time? Because if you breed this one with another short neck, it's going to be a shorter neck. Another short neck, shorter neck, shorter neck, shorter neck. We're back to the average, back to the normal size neck. Darwin went to his grave wondering about this. He couldn't figure it out. How in the world do we get anything new? How do we get any new traits, anything positive? Ironically, he had the answer in his library. How horrible is that? You have this tough question your whole life, and the answer is literally right in front of you. You just don't read it. Nothing could be more frustrating. Luckily, he died, so he didn't know it, right? But there was a paper published by Gregor Mendel, an Austrian monk. This guy was bored. He kept looking at pea plants and realized his blending inheritance was incorrect. He found particulate inheritance, okay? Particular, specific inheritance. Each one is a particle. Each one is its own thing. So we're inheriting different things from our parents, individual things. These factors were genes. He initially talked about them as traits. Mendel only saw them as traits. We didn't see them as genes until much, much later. So we didn't realize they were genes until way later. But we knew that they were carried in the nucleus. So 40 years later, we realize that they're genes on chromosomes, these big things that are lining up in the center of the nucleus. At this point, once we find that they're genes and that they're on these chromosomes, we actually are having trouble figuring out whether it's DNA or protein that's actually carrying this genetic material. But we're going to come back to that. Okay? We're going to come back to that. Because we can't figure that out for another 60 years. These are discrete pairs. We have these discrete pairs of traits. We just had last day. What did we call each of those variants of a gene? An allele. I48 something protein. Okay. Once we get these two things working together, okay, this is where we really, really bring a lot of strength to the theory of natural selection. Darwin was still not all the way behind his theory of natural selection, even at his death, okay? We'll talk about Darwin and how wishy-washy he was by the end, okay? But when we find this particulate inheritance, all of a sudden, it makes sense. It works. Incidentally, when we combine these two together, we called it the new synthesis, the new joining, okay? The joining of ideas, new synthesis. So, what was Mendel really trying to show us? He was talking about all these pea plants, but what was he seeing and what was he trying to show? Mendel knew that these factors were discrete. That means they had a start and they were one thing, one unit, discrete, and non-blending. They didn't blend together. There was one or the other, okay? One or the other. It wasn't halfway. He also knew a bunch of the behavior of these units of inheritance. So we're going to look at these peas, okay? We're going to try and figure out how these units of inheritance behave. We're going to talk about what we talked about in lab, at first, dominant and recessive. First, we're going to go with this first law. You have two copies of each gene, okay? Two alleles, okay? Law of segregation. Each individual has two copies of each gene. Two alleles per individual. Remember that alleles are not saying that they're always varying. An allele is just a variant. It's a possible variant of a gene. You can have two of the same variant. Homozygous and heterozygous. Homozygous. Homo means same. Same allele. Heterozygous. Hetero means different. Big D and little D. We know homozygous and heterozygous. We saw those already in lab. We've kind of already had those pushed into our brains. I want you to be able to immediately recognize these things. Immediately recognize and tell me homozygous versus heterozygous. Okay? Immediately. I need you to also be able to tell me homozygous dominant, homozygous recessive. I guarantee you that I will only be putting these things in those style of terms on the exam. Okay? They will be in verb form. I will talk about this one is heterozygous. This one is homozygous recessive. What's the cross? Okay? Things like that. You have to be able to translate these words. Okay? Don't just assume they're going to be in those letters, big or little. Okay? You have to start learning these terms. That's why on the first day, you get a sheet with all the terms. I would make sure when I go home tonight, I look at this sheet. And probably tomorrow night before I went and did anything else. Something that's also important to note is that in this law of segregation, we're getting one allele per parent. We're getting an allele from each parent, one from each. That means that when the parent makes these gametes, when they make these sex cells, they have to divide out, rip in half, one of these chromosomes. They only want to give you one. Okay? They don't want to have two of the same chromosome coming in. One allele per parent. Remember that it's random and it's a 50-50 chance between each. There are two possibles, okay, from each parent. Each parent has two possible. That means 50% of the time it's going to be A and 50% of the time it's going to be B. Half and half. So just random chance. Pea plants can fertilize themselves, so he could keep the crosses going within themselves and he didn't have to worry about it too much when he wanted to breed, true breed something. He could breed purple with purple with purple with purple with purple with purple until he was sure he had purple. And white with white with white with white with white with white until he was sure that he only had white. So he crossed these many, many, many times so that he was sure that one was just all purple, one was all white. Then he crossed purple with white. Every single offspring he had came out purple. What does that tell us? We've already been through the lab. We've seen this, an example of this. What would that make purple?
Dominant
allele. Okay, so we've got purple is the dominant allele. We know this one, way up here, generation one, the P generation, okay, purple was homozygous dominant, and the white was homozygous recessive. When they crossed, we got heterozygous purple. Okay? Heterozygous showing purple. What does that dominance actually mean? That means each of these alleles are coding for a protein. When that protein is produced, when it is expressed, that catalyst, that enzyme, alters one of the chemicals that make up the color of the plant. If you've got a whole lot of little P, two, right, if you're homozygous recessive, those enzymes modify to make it a white plant. If you have a dominant, that dominant color, that dominant allele hides that recessive allele, hides it, so that the flower will be purple. It will express that dominant phenotype. When he crossed these purple flowers with themselves, He had three purple and one white. A 3-to-1 ratio, purple to white. 3-to-1 ratio. 75% of them came out with the purple phenotype. 25% of them came out with the white phenotype. 3-to-1, that's how we write ratios. 3-to-1. So Mendel said that purple was dominant to white. The first generation, that P generation, is the initial. F1 means the children of that initial generation. F1 are the children. F2 are the grandchildren. All right, so this is that same list we went through. Okay, that same list you have in front of you. So we've got the gene, all right, stretch of DNA that codes for a particular trait, so like a flower color gene. Then we've got an allele, which is the variance of those genes. We talked about the genotype. Those are the alleles that you have, that you own, that you contain, those different letters. The phenotype, pheno, physical. Associate those two words in your head. Pheno, physical. Okay? They sound the same at the beginning, right? There's a reason for that. Phenotype, physical type. Phenotype, physical type. So that's what you see expressed. A dominant trait versus a recessive trait. Okay, and the dominant is expressed no matter what. The recessive is only expressed if it's the only allele present. If you have double recessive, then it's expressed. Okay, so we talk about homozygous, heterozygous, F1, and F2. Okay. Homozygous, two copies of the allele. Heterozygous, two different copies of the alleles, right? Big and little. F1 generation are the children. F2 generation are the grandchildren. Think about it like a family tree. Gametes are sex cells. You only get one of each homologous, similar. Homolog, similar, okay? Homo means same. Logos means mostly, okay? So these two chromosomes, right? We have 23 pairs. You only get one from each parent. One from each pair, from each parent. So 23 of your chromosomes are from one parent. 23 are from another. You end up with 46 total, right? We saw that in labs, there are 46 total, 23 pairs, 23 from one parent, 23 from another parent in humans. And then we have true breeding. True breeding is a quick way of saying homozygous without saying homozygous. I rarely use the term true breeding, rarely. But I have it on there so that you will know it. So, the first thing we've got to figure out is how to form gametes. We are going to do some crosses. We're going to start out with a heterozygous and a homozygous. How many different gametes can this make? Different. This is one.
That's one.
One. There's one variant here. There's one different allele. Okay? Just one. How many different alleles do we have here?
Two.
Two. Okay? That can make two gametes. So when we set up a Punnett square for this, we would have one versus two. Okay? One versus two. Remember that this one is a sex cell. There's just no variant. Two are two other different sex cells, okay? Different gametes. Why is this important? And we do the cross, we see okay? Why is this important? We look at this at first and say, well, duh, right? Oh, I see that. There's only one variant there, there's only two variant there. I don't have to worry about this. I'll be able to tell how many gametes. But how many gametes are going to be? How many gametes am I going to have here? Right? This is where this statement comes into play and makes our lives easier. Now we have lots and lots of different alleles in our body. We have lots and lots, okay, of alleles on each chromosome. That means that we can have huge variations in each individual gamete we create. Okay? No two gametes, well, some two gametes, but rarely are two gametes going to be alike. Okay? It's very unlikely to have two gametes that are the same. From the same parent. Or from different parents also. So you're going to keep increasing variation. You're going to have variation. This is going to be important if you have to set up a larger Punnett square. You need to be able to remember how many different gametes you need to write down. How many different columns you need to make, okay? Or rows you need to make. If you're doing a combination here, if you're doing the cross. Just going through and taking
big A, big B, big C, big D, big E, big F, big G, big A, big B, big C, big D, little E, big F, little G.
Soon, very quickly, if not already, you're going to get lost. Okay? Knowing that you need 16 is going to keep you on the right track. Because if you only write down 15 of them, you know to keep looking for another. So that's gametes. Okay, so we've got this multiplication here. I'm kind of giving you these answers. Alright? Two variants, one variant, two variants, four different gametes. Okay? Two variants, one variant, four gametes. 2, 2, 2, 2, 16. Okay? Only one, 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 one different gamete. They're always going to have the same gamete. So which of the following can this make? Which of the following gametes can that parent make? Well, can it make this gamete?
No.
Why not? Actually, it's because you have 2A. Okay? A gamete, you only want one letter. Okay? From it. So the gamete, the sex cell, is half of that. It only has one allele of each. Okay? When you see the two alleles, this is two of the A allele, something's wrong with that gamete. Okay? It shouldn't produce that gamete. How about this one? Could it make this allele?
No, it has a dominant E.
Mm-hmm. And that does not. Okay? How about this one?
No, obviously. No dominant.
No dominant. How about this one?
Yes.
Yep. Well, no. Forgot I had that on there. Yeah, so it's me, alright? What's the chance of this parent producing this gamete? Okay? What's the chance? What's one gamete out of how many possibilities? Eight. Okay? There's one variant here, two, one, two, one, two. So it's 2 times 2 times 2. That's 8. Okay? Only one of them, only one of them is this gamete. So it's 1 out of 8 possibilities. 1 over 8. That's how we find the likelihood. To find the likelihood of a gamete, find the number of possible, 1 divided by the number of possible gametes will get you the probability of obtaining that gamete. Now that's very algebraic. Does that make sense to everybody? Only one of these. There can be only one that we want. Okay? There can be only one. Alright? We can find out how many there are altogether, and then we only pick one of them. Yeah, a gene is both.
Yeah.
That's the gene that is only.
Okay?
When they're both, when there are two, it's a full gene. When there's just one, it's just an allele. Okay? So now we know how to make those, or how to find out how many of these sex cells we're going to have. Okay? We've also found out the probability of any specific gamete. Next, we need to figure out how many different possible alleles we have. Okay? This is actually a little bit easier. Okay? Okay. For alleles, we do the same first step. How many variants?
Two.
How many?
One.
Two. With alleles, we add. These are different unique alleles. There are only 5 different unique alleles, right? Those two are exactly the same allele. They only count once. So you just write up that number of variation and add it together to give me the number of alleles you have. One variant, one variant, one variant, one variant, one variant. 5 different alleles. Okay? 2 differences, 2 differences, 2 differences, 2 differences, 8 different alleles.